we need a stronger Europe in this very fragmented world. I mean, we have a world which is dominated by Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping. So Europe needs to be a player and not a playground.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy. And I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you, your passion becomes theirs. And I call this the power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Andreas Bock, the head of communications at the European Council on Foreign Relations. The ECFR is an international think tank that conducts cutting-edge research on European foreign and security policy. With staff and researchers representing every EU member state, it has a diverse council consisting of high-ranking public servants, politicians, journalists, business leaders, and thinkers. The ECFR is a truly European organization. Prior to the ECFR, Andreas worked in journalism. He was a head of the editorial department at NOST, an international network of journalists spanning the EU, Eastern Europe, and neighboring countries for over 11 years. Andreas, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Can you just tell me a bit more about your journey to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me, John. I basically started my career after studying cultural science and social science, actually in Hungary, where I started to work as a cultural manager for a German institution. So I was sent there and worked there in Budapest for 2 years for the Hungarian cultural minority, doing a lot of cultural work there. But after these 2 years, at the end of my contract, I decided to stay in Hungary for another year, and I started to work on another project, but also started freelancing in journalism. So I wrote for a couple of media outlets in Germany on domestic Hungarian and foreign affairs. And after that year, the third year in Hungary, went back then to Germany and started working for a German media NGO called NOST, and was there heading the editorial department for an online press roundup, where we basically did translations of commentaries on the most pressing issues that were debated at that time. And the commentaries came from all the different, important media outlets across European markets. And during this work, I realized that I'm really interested in foreign policy, and especially in European foreign policy. So when the opportunity, like after 10 years, came to join the European Council on Foreign Relations, I was very happily moving over to ECFR to head the communications department, and then basically work for a foreign policy think tank on all those different policy issues. Because as head of communications, of course, the work is pretty much cross-cutting, so you have to deal with all these kinds of different foreign policy topics. It's quite challenging, but it's also super interesting. And I was continuing the red thread through my career to work on European issues. So I was really happy that I started there at ECFR.
Great. Now, people probably know that a think tank is an organization that's often filled with very bright people, academic people that write white papers and write research papers and try to think on deep policy issues that then governments might take up. But will you just explain a bit more for lay people what ECFR does exactly in very simple terms?
Yeah, sure. I think our main goal is to really conduct in-depth research for a values-based European foreign policy. So our goal is to build pan-European alliances for better cooperation on European foreign and security policy at a time when we need a stronger Europe in this very fragmented world. I mean, we have a world which is dominated by Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping. And so we believe that in this world, Europe needs to be a player and not a playground. So in all our work, that is what we're trying to do. And so we share our ideas from our research with decision makers of governments in the various EU member states, predominantly in the bigger European member states where we have also our national offices, to shape European foreign policy. We do not take an institutional view on policies. It's the views of our experts in our various programs. But we, of course, amplify them through our communications and media advocacy work. So our programs, we have overall, we have at the moment 7 regional programs on Africa, on Asia, on the Middle East, European power, wider Europe, and the US. And all those research is coming from those programs, but it's amplified, of course, also through our work in the national offices with the colleagues there who have very good contacts and a very good network to the respective stakeholders in the different ministries and governments.
Can you give me an example of the work that you've done being taken up by a European government as foreign policy? Any kind of wins that have taken place recently?
Yeah, I could maybe mention one activity or
please do.
Yeah, one thing that we did 2 years ago, about 2 years ago, when you know ECFR was very much focused on the consequences of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and we always have been trying to find ways to support Ukraine and to support or to make sure that European leaders support Ukraine in the best possible way. So what we did we came up with the so-called Leopard plan. So Leopard is a battle tank that was back then urgently needed by the Ukraine army in their fight against Russian aggression.
Yeah, I remember that.
Poland was back then requesting to send those Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine, but they needed the approval from Germany because these are actually German battle tanks. So we advocated, first of all, for a consortium of European Leopard 2 users, so countries. So there's about 13 countries in Europe that had those battle tanks and could technically deliver them. And after we, put up an article on a website, came up with media notes, did a media briefing, a public event, but of course also all sorts of other more private advocacy. We succeeded in and basically the German government approved the delivery of 2 battle tanks from Poland, but also delivered battle tanks themselves. So this was basically one of a clear example where basically our work as a think tank made an impact, supported, of course, also by communications efforts. So, for instance, also politicians during this time, then politicians from the 3 coalition parties in Germany, they took up this request basically and endorsed our Leopard plan, and in the end, basically the government in Germany decided to deliver the tanks and approve the delivery of the Leopard 2 plants from Poland to Ukraine.
Great. That's a good example there of something that really worked very effectively to get those tanks to support Ukraine with its ground forces, which were being really damaged by Russia at the time. And so you mentioned there Donald Trump, the new US president, and his very different style of doing things. Now, he's claimed as an early win the situation with hostages in Gaza and Israel for getting those Palestine and Israel back around the table. What's your view of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's from my point of view, it's not really surprising that Trump is claiming this as a win. It also, of course, pretty much coincides with, or more or less coincides with the inauguration. I think also, I mean, not only the Biden administration was at the table, but also an envoy from the Trump team from the Republicans. So I think that was pretty clear that. So I could totally understand that he did that. But first of all, I'm of course very happy that that we have like a ceasefire or at least a deal, an agreement on a ceasefire. How this then plays out and what happens next, and this is of course remains to be seen, but. For us as ECFR, of course, it's also important that, Europeans will also have like a role in the upcoming negotiations or in the way like peace in the region is can be secured and stabilized. And this is something our Middle East team, for instance, is working very hard on, because at the moment, if you see who are the actors, it's the US, it's Qatar, Egypt. So it's rather non-European actors. And of course, as a European foreign policy think tank, we also do think that we should have like, we should have some leverage there as it's in our immediate neighborhood.
So, but do you agree with Donald Trump that it was essentially his strongman tactic of telling Hamas that there'll be hell to pay if the hostages aren't handed over by the time he was made president? I mean, that's his argument. Is that one you agree with?
No, I mean, I certainly don't agree that this was only his. Basically, his responsibility that this deal came into being, but it probably, basically the fact that it coincides with the inauguration means that it probably has also something to do with him taking over. But I think in the background there's been talks for months and which were led by other actors and by the Biden administration. So I don't entirely agree that it's only his responsibility.
Okay. Are there any times in your career that you've really thought something would land really well and it didn't quite go as well from a comms perspective?
In general, maybe not only from a comms perspective, but it also is connected, of course. In my early career, I failed many times because I think I didn't take enough decisions or waited too long to make a call. This could also have to do with like, let's say, communications efforts, etc. So I think there's this rule by the former U.S. State Secretary Colin Powell saying that every time you face a tough decision, you should have no less than 40% and no more than 70% of the information you need to make this decision. And I can't really say that I'm always applying this rule, but I kind of like the approach. You will never have all the information you need to make a perfect decision. So you should trust your intuition and experience. But this experience of failure, because of a lack of decision, helped me a lot to change course and certainly helped me to progress in my following roles.
I think that's a really good example, because failing to make a decision is a decision in itself, because something will happen as a result of you failing to make a decision, and you're leaving it to be that thing. So I think it's a really great example there, and you should make decisions early and not wait for all the information, because you're never going to have all the information, which is what lots of people end up doing when they procrastinate. So that's a great example. What's your favorite forms of media for getting information?
I basically start off the day usually using or reading newsletter, but mostly for getting the foreign policy news on in the morning.
Which newsletters?
I do read the Brussels playbook of Politico.
Yeah.
And there's another German newsletter I read from a German news outlet. But the Brussels playbook is like for my work is quite relevant.
Yeah. What's the German news outlet that you?
The German news outlet is from Süddeutsche Zeitung, so it's a very important one of the two important German daily newspapers, and they have like this this morning dossier, and this is basically the other one. I would love to read more newsletters in the morning, but I need to start my work, so I can't really just read newsletters. But for me, it's important to read the stuff that is relevant for my work, and so it basically gives me an update on what is important on foreign policy issues, and this is why I'm reading this. So I'm not so much following like extensively the news. I just rather do the newsletters, and then in the evening I basically wrap up the day and following what has happened, and then really listening to the news or watching the news and the news shows. But this is rather something I do in the evening, and then in general, it's probably not surprising, but I really love podcasts and listen a lot of podcasts whenever it's possible. I mean, it's great for if I go to work or walk around, etc. Then you can use your time and while you're on the move and listen to something. So there's no visual attention is required. It gives you your eyes a break. That's also great. So there's so much screen time, right? We're looking at the screen all the time. So it's good to use audio for input.
Any particular podcasts that you would recommend or listen to?
I obviously listen a lot to our own flagship podcast, which is The World in 30 Minutes, a foreign policy podcast by our director, Mark Leonard. I can really recommend for whoever is interested in foreign policy. And we just also started a new podcast series ahead of the German elections, which are happening on the 23rd of February. So it's the podcast called Searching for Deutschland from two of my colleagues. The future of German foreign policy. And then I have two other podcasts I'm regularly listen to. The one is on, it's just some music. I really love music. And so the podcast is a German podcast that highlights like global upcoming or new music pieces from bands from everywhere. And the other one is like a podcast dealing with business topics. So these are basically my my podcast, and I would love to listen to more, but again, there's limited time, so I can't.
That's true. Final question. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Yeah, I think I would like to have dinner with David Bowie. He, as we all know, was one of the stars, music stars, specifically of the 70s, or he was really famous in the 70s. But it was also a time when his life was falling apart, so pretty much 50 years ago. And so he had lots of personal problems, burnout, drugs, etc. So he decided to leave Los Angeles, and he came to Berlin, actually, to make a restart in 1976. And he tried to live here an anonymous life. He was working in a studio by the Berlin Wall. He was sharing a flat with Iggy Pop. And he did three great albums here in Berlin. And I think he also produced two albums for Iggy Pop. So he was fascinated by his new home, Berlin. Perhaps a little bit like I was fascinated when I moved to Berlin a while ago. So it would be great to have this conversation with him about this time, about his feelings, about working in the city, in the city with two parts back then still, and how everything has changed since then. So it was great to hear these thoughts from this great artist.
Great. And Andreas Bock, Head of Communications at the European Council on Foreign Relations, speaking to us in Berlin and while I'm in London. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. Thank you.